I think they were adjusting their execution machine for my considerable height.
"Welcome to the end of the line, McGill,"
Claver said.
"I hope you don't mind if I watch justice as it's being served."
"Not at all. I think I'll join you." Careful not to enter the central execution area, I circled around the chamber to approach the witness gallery. Claver stood up in alarm and watched me suspiciously.
"What are you doing? Your place is right there. See that burn mark in the center? The floor there is made of stardust, material so dense it can't burn. The projectors are powerful and quick, don't be afraid. You won't feel a thing."
"I'm not afraid," I said, truthfully. I gave him a little grin. We both stood about 5 seats apart in the gallery. I waved for him to be seated and took a chair myself. The Narbs ignored both of us while fooling with their equipment and barking at each other in their odd language. "See," I said, "Narbs can count. They know I still have about 15 minutes to report. They don't care what I do until then." Eyeing me distrustfully, Claver sat down, slowly. Then we had ourselves a good old-fashioned stare-down. It made me feel happy to see worry in his face. He thought he had the tiger caged, but he wasn't absolutely sure of it. Claver finally shrugged and tried to relax. We watched the Narbs go about their work. I reflected that in the old days, prisoners were often treated to the sight of watching their executioners build gallows to hang them with. The difference here was a matter of speed and efficiency. I only had a few minutes left. What would it feel like to stand there and be blasted into a wisp of white-hot plasma by multiple intersecting beams of energy? Probably it wouldn't feel like anything at all. One second I'd be standing there, and the next I'd be a puff of expanding steam and dust particles. I tried to tell myself I'd been through worse, because I had. But somehow that wasn't good enough.
"You're going to stand there and let them light you up?"
Claver asked. "That's the plan."
"I can wait for that,"
he said, crossing his arms. "So can I said, relaxing and leaning back in my chair. It creaked with my weight. It wasn't shaped exactly right for a human, but it worked well enough. I took my boots off and put my feet up on the back of the chair in the row in front of me. I did my best to look like a man who didn't have a care in the world. Chapter 38. Claver tried to match my performance, working hard to look like he didn't care. But he failed. He looked nervous, and I thought I saw a trickle of sweat run down his cheek. He kept eyeing me, my bare feet, and the execution system. Finally, he couldn't take it any longer.
"I know you, boy," he said. "You're as dumb as a sack of hammers. But you've always got an angle. What are you trying to pull off? I don't accept for 1 second you've come here to submit to execution."
In a way, his attitude bugged me. He had no honor, so he automatically assumed others were the same way. In the past, this flaw in his character had allowed me to manipulate him. Deciding to have a little fun before I died, I narrowed my eyes and put on a nasty grin. Then I slid my hand into my jacket pocket. "You want to know if I've got a surprise coming? Is that it?" I asked. "You're just the man I'd like to show this to." Claver's eyes widened as he stared at my hand in my pocket.
"Hold on, hold on. Easy now, big fella. We've got a misunderstanding here, that's all. I'm on your side."
I hesitated. I had nothing in my hand other than a half-eaten chocolate bar I'd kept after yesterday's lunch. For laughs, I twisted my fist around inside my jacket so the rectangular shape bulged oddly under the fabric. Claver watched this display with equally bulging eyes.
"You've always been a man who's willing to die for a cause, I get that.
Claver said, talking fast.
But this isn't the time. I can help you out. I know what you want. You want to blast this ship to hell and back, don't you?
Admittedly, I was taken aback. So that's what he thought, that I was some kind of suicidal walking bomb? I tried to think of a way to play off his misconception, but I couldn't think of anything good. For fun, I kept playing the part he'd given me, looking mean and fondling my chocolate bar. Screwing with Claver was the only source of joy I had left.
You guessed it, I said in my meanest, crazy redneck voice. Okay, I'm with you, he said. In fact, it's a good plan. We can't keep talking here, though. They might get suspicious. I'll just...
He got up to leave, but I shook my head and stood up with him, my fist big and round in my jacket.
No, Claver, I said. You're not going anywhere. You're part of this show.
You should let me help you out.
I don't need help or tricks, I said.
You're going to die, old man, right here with me. Look me in the eyes. I'm the last sight you'll ever see.
Hold on. Let me make you an offer.
What are you talking about?
I demanded. I'll revive you after you blow up this ship, he said. That's the least I can do. Give me your data. I'll do it, I swear. Just let me get off this vessel before you activate your detonator.
I pretended to think about it, enjoying myself. Don't worry about my next revive, I told him. I've got that covered. But you? It sounds like you don't have any way to get out of this.
He looked nervous. What do you think, that I'm some kind of wizard?
Right, I said thoughtfully. The only revival machines in Frontier Systems are those brought in on big ships. That means our Legion battle wagons and this Nair Prefect's vessel. Once this ship is gone, that's it, because I'm betting Turov isn't sweet on you right now. At least not enough to bring you back to life on her ship. He didn't answer, he just grimaced. As I thought about it, I understood his position. He was worried about getting permed himself. That fear had caused him to jump to conclusions about what I was up to. Fear, plus my reputation for reckless behavior in situations like this one, had made my bluff work. Maybe we can make a deal? But I doubt it, I said. You're right. I could let you escape being permed. But what can you do for me? Right now, I'm liking things the way they are. I'm thinking I can solve two problems with a single push of a button. You're gone. The Nairbs are gone. I come back later. Everything's perfect. My thumbnail played with the wrapper and dug into the chocolate a little. He watched and sweated, trying to think of something he could do for me.
You're going to have trouble getting away with blowing up a Nairb ship, he said. It's one thing to inconvenience a galactic by killing him, but a whole Imperial ship, that's worth real credits.
You only have a few minutes left, Claver.
You can't have brought and placed a bomb on your own, he said. Turov has to be behind this, but why?
The answer to this came to me easily. Glibness in lying is a gift, one I've been blessed with all my life. You can ask anyone from my old elementary school days for confirmation on that point. The Nairbs have too much evidence aboard, I said. Turov figures we can't let them finish their report and send it to the core system on a deep link.
Right, right, Claver said, buying it all. The prefect will report in the second he has the case closed up and you've been executed. Nairbs don't like wasting money on services, and deep link relays are expensive, especially all the way to the core systems. One big blip of data is what they'll use, and you're here to stop that transmission.
His ideas surprised me a little. Was I really such a big deal that the Nairbs were going to confirm my removal from the cosmos all the way back to the Magua? That seemed bizarre to me. I'd always figured I was small potatoes to the Galactics. Claver snapped his fingers and grinned.
I've got it. Your plan is flawed. You can't just blow this ship up with a conventional nuke. There will be an investigation eventually. There's no way around it. They'll trace the radioactives to Earth. What you need is a false trail,
a scapegoat. I was listening, but frowning. I didn't know exactly where he was going with this.
Listen, listen, he said, beginning to raise his voice. I'll let you finish your mission. Turov will be proud. I'm just going to change the circumstances a little.
Okay, but hurry the hell up. He beckoned me to follow him. Figuring I had nothing to lose, I pulled my boots back on and left the chamber. The Nerbs took some notice of this. They barked after us. I was pretty sure they were pointing out I only had about 10 minutes left before my execution. I waved and nodded, then disappeared into a passageway following Claver. I knew that in a way the Nerbs didn't care what I did. They were bureaucrats, not sheriffs. If I didn't report to their execution chamber, they'd grind on, slowly turning their wheels of justice. They'd draw up new charges, maybe expanding them to include the rest of the legionnaires in the system. They'd then order more people to submit to their will. That was the trouble with galactic law. If you didn't give in, they'd just up the ante and come after you again. They were relentless, and I honestly think blindly applying the law to others was the greatest joy in their sorry existences. Claver and I began to run the second we were out of sight. We took big strides in the light gravity, our boots thumping on the deck as we charged down a long passageway. We came at last to the docking area where a strange ship was attached to the Nerb vessel. It had to be Claver's ship. I grabbed his shoulder when we got to the hatch and started to climb in. "We can't just run from the Nerbs," I said.
"That's not the plan, dummy. Let go of me."
"I'll go in first," I said, yanking him back. I didn't want him zipping away or pulling a gun on me. Inside the ship, Claver had the oddest collection of crap I'd ever seen crammed into a small vessel. It was a smuggler's ship, that much was obvious. There were loose jewels and buckets, powders and bags, guns packed in crates of oil. He had it all. "You got a stuffed bear I could buy?" I asked him. "I always wanted one of those."
"I'm fresh out, McGill. Now, why don't you get out of my way so I can show you the weapon?"
"What weapon?" He rolled his eyes like I was the biggest moron this side of the moon.
"The squid weapon. What do you think I've been talking about?"
"Why do we need a squid weapon?"
"I can see I'm going to have to spell this out for you. You're not going to use the detonator in your pocket to blow up this ship. You're going to use a squid mini-missile pod instead. They're a little hard to program, but I'll show you how."
"We don't have time."
"Sure we do. The Nerbs will mark you down as a no-show, sure. Then they'll up the charges. But they won't report it into the core systems, not yet. Not until they've decided on their next step. Nerbs aren't fast. What bureaucrat is?"
I had to admit he had a point there.
"When you don't show up for your execution," he continued, "they'll just grind along down the path they've set. That will buy you the time you need to take the initiative."
He actually had a squid missile pod in his ship. I couldn't believe it. I'd never seen so many stolen devices in a single place, not since Tech World. This made me realize something. That pile of junk hidden above the fountain back on Tech World, that was your stash, wasn't it? I asked him. He flashed me a grin.
"Yeah, you were robbing me, not the Tau. Does that make you feel any better?"
I shrugged, then smiled. "Actually, it does." I examined his collection of equipment. Claver called the stuff trade goods, but I knew a pile of smuggled contraband when I saw it. If the Nerbs had ever seen fit to come aboard this ship and have themselves a private inspection, he'd have been permed right off. I filed that tidbit of information away for the future.
"You'll take this pod, see,"
he told me, showing me a strange-looking contraption with a mass of missiles loaded into it. The thing looked like a peeled pomegranate packed with clusters of explosives.
"Set it down next to their engine core. Activate it manually, and direct it to unload its full magazine into the reactor all at once. Boom! You catch a revive, and all our problems are solved."
I stared at him. "Where are you going to be while I'm doing this?"
"Flying out of here."
My eyes narrowed. "Why the hell should I trust you on this?" I asked, lifting my hand inside my jacket. "I've got the bomb business covered."
"Listen, The squids will take the blame this way. I guarantee it. I don't want Earth wiped out any more than you do. I need to trade with someone, don't I? These missiles are loaded with radioactives from the squid star systems. Radioactives are made inside the guts of stars. The galactics can trace them to their source of origin. The signatures will match up to the squids, and they'll take the blame when the investigation comes.
All right, I said, pretending to be doubtful. I guess it could work.
Claver looked relieved, but a few seconds later, as we unloaded the missile pod and stood in the passageway, he frowned at me. He looked at my jacket again. I'd taken my hand out of there to help with the bulky pod, and it must have looked kind of deflated. Following his gaze, I reached into my pocket again and grasped my chocolate bar like it was a shiv.
"Where is your bomb, anyway?"
he asked.
"On the engine core? When did you planted."
The hint of suspicion in his eyes tipped me off. My thin, pathetic dodge was beginning to unravel in his mind. I was surprised it had taken this long. I was only wearing a light infantry uniform, after all. There was no way I could be carrying a bomb on me. A detonator, sure, but not a bomb. And I hadn't had time to plant anything in the nav engine room. Anyone who could count should be able to deduce that. "Of course," I snapped. "I've got the bomb on the core already." He held out his hand. I glared at his offending fingers, which he used to make grabbing motions.
"What?"
I asked, tensing up.
"Give me the key, McGill. That's what you have in your pocket. There's no way you could have reached the core and planted anything down there without the key."
Claver was talking about the Galactic Key, of course, the artifact that allowed the Magua to break any of the technological locks their subservient races invented. Now I understood the look in his eyes. It wasn't suspicion about the bomb. It was greed for the key.
"Come on," he said. "Don't let something so valuable be blown up with the ship. Give it to me."
"All right," I said, pulling my hand out of my jacket at last. Claver watched hungrily. His eyes were fixated on my fist. Instead of receiving an invaluable artifact, he caught my knuckles in his face. At the last second, as my punch slammed home into his nose, he must have realized he was looking at fingers wrapped around a chocolate bar, not a galactic key, a detonator, or anything else. The baffled look on his face was priceless to me. His greed transformed into confusion and disgust. But then my big fist nailed him, and he reeled back. He slumped on the deck outside his ship. Behind him was the open hatch, full of his piled-up stolen junk. I picked up the missile pod and heaved it onto my back. There couldn't be much time left to try to pull this off. Fortunately, the gravity on the ship was set for nerve comfort everywhere aboard, or I couldn't have budged the missile pod. As it was, I was grunting and heaving with it on my back. I must have looked like Atlas holding up the world. The first obstacle I met up with was a serious one. Heading down the main passageway, I ran into two nerves. They were humping along, looking for all the world like a pair of green seals on a beach. They chattered at me in irritation, then switched on their translators.
"Beast, you will put that object down and explain yourself."
"Beast, huh?" I asked him. "That's what you really call us, isn't it? Well, it's time to show you I am a beast." I put down the missile pod with a grunt, then walked toward the nerbs. They didn't get it, not until the last moment when I slammed their two heads together. Now, I'd only planned to crack their skulls together and knock them out. I'd forgotten, unfortunately, that nerbs come from a low-grav world. They had thin skulls, about the thickness of a sheet of cardboard and not much tougher. Their skulls fractured and gushed on the deck. Looking down at the mess, I realized I was committed now. Using one of the dead Nerb's flippers, I was able to pass through the hatch to the bridge. I thought about the engine room, I really did, but I didn't think it would work out. There was no telling how many obstacles might be down there. I didn't know the layout of the ship, and I didn't have a lot of time before the Nerb's got smart and employed defensive systems to put me down. Claver had probably known this but hadn't cared. He just wanted to get the hell away from me and see me dead. I sealed the hatch to the bridge behind me. I managed to disable the override controls from the inside. Fortunately, Empire design mandated that control systems be universally workable for as many beings as possible, so I had no trouble operating them. Steering the ship would have been difficult, even so, if I hadn't had such an easy, unmistakable target to aim for. Adjusting the helm and locking in the course, I engaged the engines full thrust. This caused everything aboard to tip and roll to the back of the chamber it was in. I was pinned to the rear bulkhead for almost a minute before I managed to get crawling again. I'd almost blown it. If I hadn't been able to move, my whole plan would have been for nothing. But I'm a strong man, and crawling isn't as hard as it sounds, even under 3 G's of centrifugal force. When I reached the missile pod, I engaged it, overriding every safety symbol that popped up, and ordered all the missiles to fire at once. There was a timer, a short one, that ticked down for a few seconds. What were the Nerbs doing all around the ship during their last moments? Probably they'd been caught and squished flat by the crushing G-forces. I don't know. Hell, they might have all died by now, their hearts unable to pump under this much weight. I rolled onto my back and looked toward the big display on the forward wall of the bridge. The central star of this system, Gamma Pavonis itself, loomed huge and white-hot. That had been my target, the star itself. My lips curled back from my teeth, and I tasted metal. That was from radiation poisoning, I knew. That's all I can remember now. Because I died at some point after that, and my memories of those final minutes are lost forever. It's just as well, I guess. Whether I blew up or burned up, it couldn't have been much fun. Chapter 39. There was a posse waiting for me when I was reborn. They weren't there to throw me a party, either. "That's it," the biospecialist said. "He's a good grow, not that it matters." A collar was clamped onto my neck. That was a new one. An honest-to-God collar, like I was some kind of beagle. "What the hell?" I croaked, but that was all I managed to get out before I was roughly hauled off the table. When you first return to life, your senses don't always work right. For me, the world was a swimming blur, like I was in an underwater universe full of bright lights and barking voices. No one seemed happy with me, I gathered that much. "I don't see why we bothered to revive this piece of shit again," said someone. I didn't recognize the voice, but it was rough, male, and pissed off. "He screwed the lot of us, that's for sure. We're supposed to take him down to detention. The brass wants to know exactly what happened for intel purposes. If he won't talk, we're to use any means necessary to get a full confession." "Good enough for me." Naked and collared, I was hauled through some steel security doors and handed over to a pair of hard-eyed guards. They dragged me into another room and threw me into a chair. My wrists were clamped down to the arms of the chair, which turned out to be shiny, cold, stainless steel. By this time, I had a reasonable level of control over my body, so I kicked the guy who was trying to clamp my ankles to the chair legs. I caught him right in the jimmy, and he grunted unhappily. I enjoyed the moment, but it was probably a mistake. They punched me for a while until one of them called it quits, pulling back the red-faced guy I'd nailed earlier. "Give it up, Bill. That's what he wants. If you give him an easy out, he'll avoid talking entirely." Huffing and snorting with rage, the man named Bill stepped away. They were both from Legion Solstice. That didn't bode well for my immediate future. Like I've said, Solstice people were a hard-bitten lot, like those from Varus. No Legion man really likes a guy from another Legion. It was always easier to mistreat someone from a group that you saw as a rival. I mumbled something through broken lips. They splashed my face with water so I could speak intelligibly again. "What's that, Varus?" Bill asked. I said, "You boys are a couple of prime pussies." This amused them. "Why is that?" "Strapping down a fresh revive and beating on him for fun? I've always heard that's the kind of thing that gets a Solstice man hard in the morning, but I didn't want to believe it." For some reason, my words troubled Bill, but not the other guy. The other guy laughed and sneered.
You know what you did? You screwed Earth out of spite. The Empire will never stand for this. Remember what they did to the squids back on Dustworld?
I sure do. I watched it. They nodded like they already knew that.
Well, they're going to do the same to Earth once they find out you drove one of their ships right into the local star.
But I didn't. They shook their heads in disgust. Bill leaned over so he could look me in the eye.
Really? He asked. More denials? Simply saying you didn't do something isn't going to wash, McGill. We've heard about you from your own officers. You wrecked the NERB's ship just to screw all of us. Well, now it's payback time. First, we're going to find out exactly what you did second by second while you were aboard the NERB ship. Then, we're going to perm you good.
What if I don't feel like talking? Bill got up and walked away, but then the other guy came close and gave me a grim smile.
This isn't your first time around, McGill. We've already killed you six, no, was it seven times now? Something like that, Randy, Bill said.
He twisted his lips and thought.
Might be seven. I think it has been seven, in fact.
For the first time, I felt a chill go through me. I couldn't remember any other lives or deaths at the hands of these two, but I knew they might have had the storage backup of my mental engrams turned off. Could these two goons really have revived me and beaten me to death seven times? What was going to make them stop?
Let me talk to Centurion Belter, I said. She knows me. I'll tell her my story.
They sighed.
That's not going to wash, Bill said. Never has, never will. You tell us what happened, and then we'll finish you nice and clean. But if you don't give us the truth this time, it'll go badly, all over again.
I was in a quandary now. My heart was racing like it hadn't been since the revival. It was one thing to be dragged around and beaten. I'd experienced plenty of that in my life in the legions. But to hear about my former abused selves and to know I was about to repeat their fate, I didn't like it and wanted to change the outcome this time. But how could a man outthink himself? I had to assume all the immediate dodges had already occurred to past McGills and they'd failed to impress. The only thing I could come up with was something that I knew and my past selves didn't, that this was my seventh time around. Maybe I could use that.
Seven was always my mom's lucky number, I said. You pricks have mamas, don't you?
I looked at the one called Randy, the meaner one, thoughtfully.
Well, maybe not you.
You're going to insult us?
Randy asked in return, shaking his head.
You've gone down that road. I have to admit, you can come up with some good insults when you want to.
I didn't have an answer. I was breathing hard and testing my bonds. They held me firmly. Steel clamps were good for that. Randy straightened up and sighed.
Well, we already know where your sensitive areas are, so we might as well get started.
He moved around behind me, which freaked me out a little. I couldn't crank my neck around far enough to see what he was up to. The other guy, Bill, put his butt on the table and crossed his arms.
We know your back isn't that much of an issue for you, Randy said, almost like he was talking about a group project we were all involved in. Some men don't like a kidney punch, but you sucked them right up.
He was right, and that made me feel a bit sick inside because it meant he really did know me.
Yes, let's speed this up, I said. Just to check, you already know about Claver, right? That he had a small smuggler's ship docked with the NERB ship?
We know all about that,
Bill said while Randy fooled around behind my back, rattling metal objects.
At least, we've heard that lie before.
How do you know it's a lie?
Because Claver has already communicated with us. If he'd been left unconscious in a docked ship, he would have been dead like everyone else aboard.
Okay, then. I can only assume he escaped.
Fair enough. The trouble is, he hasn't verified one word of your story. He was never on that ship, McGill. He doesn't have mini-missile pods or anything else. He's shown us pictures and cargo rosters. Your lies have already been disproven.
I felt something then, a sharp stabbing pain that went on and on. Someone was driving a needle into my back. I hissed and squirmed, but that didn't make it any better.
That works pretty good, said Randy from behind me. You see, Bill, this man doesn't mind a punch in the back, but a needle, that's different.
Yeah, said Bill, as if bored and a little uncomfortable.
Looks like I kicked the wrong guy, I said.
No, no, said Randy cheerfully. Bill's just as big of an asshole as I am. Now, next question.
What's the point? I demanded between gritted teeth. You already know my story. There's only one answer for why you're on Revive Number 7.
What's that?
Randy asked.
You're having fun, that's all. This is a kick for you. Bill here, he was honestly pissed. I can understand that. But you, Randy, you're the sick fuck, aren't you?
The needle was driven in again, and it was going for broke. I twisted and writhed. Finally, Bill's big hand came down on the sadist's wrist.
That's enough. McGill's right. No one dies 7 times telling the same story. We're not going to get anything else out of him.
The freak looked disappointed. He sighed.
Yep. I guess it's over. Time to end it. Goodbye, McGill. It's been fun. But you're all used up now.
I glared at him while he put a black hood over my face.
Too chicken shit to kill a helpless man who looks you in the eye, huh? Just as I thought. A pair of wimps.
They pulled off the hood and Bill looked at me curiously.
Why keep lying, McGill?
He asked.
Why keep lying and dying? This is your last go-round. You're permed after this. It's all signed, sealed, and delivered.
I've got my orders, I said. I can't talk to anyone less than an officer. And besides, I'm not going to be permed.
I laughed and let blood dribble on my chest.
If you clowns only knew how many times I've been killed and told I was permed, I'll be back alive in a week.
They looked curious. Maybe I hadn't talked this way before. Maybe past McGill's had taken different approaches. Me? I knew I was screwed, so I didn't care anymore.
What do you mean, you'll be back?
I told them real shockers then. I told them about killing a galactic back on Steel World, being executed for it and coming back. I told them about a few other times, too, where I should never have drawn breath again. They listened, and I could tell they'd never heard these stories before. They seemed a little shocked and upset.
That's crazy, Bill said. You can't just go killing galactics and erasing their tappers.
We've all got our jobs to do, I said. Your work is easier than mine, that's all. You get off on it, I understand. Everyone has their dark secrets. But you're not going to perm me. You're just having a bit of fun.
Bill's face darkened at my offhanded assumption he was a sadist. He didn't like to think of himself as a sadist.
Randy, on the other hand, never argued with my accusations. I could tell he'd made peace with what he was.
We've got to report this, Bill said.
Oh, come on, it's total bullshit.
Eventually, Bill called for an officer. It took a while, but they brought in a new face. She was familiar to me, but not really a friend. It was Centurion Belter.
He keeps telling us that he'll talk to you, sir, Bill said. He's got some crazy stories, things that might change our status with the Empire. I thought it would be best to bring in an officer as he requested before we perm him.
Belter frowned at them, then at me. She crossed her arms under her small, tight breasts and stared.
What do you have to say, McGill?
We aren't screwed.
The ship blew up before it hit Gamma Pavonis's corona, didn't it?
Yes, but that could be due to...
A lot of things, I know. But I know exactly why it happened. I told her about Claver and his squid mini-missiles. When the region of space and the wreckage that was still orbiting the star was analyzed, the radiation signatures would implicate the squids, not us.
The Narbs aren't going to buy it, McGill, even if you're right. Claver has evidence all lined up to show he wasn't involved.
Okay, I said. Then we'll have to blame the squids for an outright attack. We should do that anyway. Why not lie? The Empire should declare war on the squids, not just call them neutrals. This is the second Imperial ship they've destroyed.
They marked the cephalopods as exterminated back on Dustworld and didn't pursue it further.
Why not? I demanded. Because they're weak, that's why not. They don't have a fleet out here, so they don't want a war. We should make them join us, force them to follow their own policies against the squids.
Centurion Belter nodded tiredly.
You're probably right, but it doesn't really matter. You've been tried and convicted. You're to be permed. I'm sorry about that, as I owe you one.
I glanced over at the two fiends.
Take me out of here, I said. Let me talk to you about something important you don't know. Then you can do what you have to.
She shook her head and the two guards laughed.
That's not going to happen, McGill, she said.
All right, then, get them out of here and turn off the recorders.
She thought about it for a minute and then ordered the guards to leave. They didn't like it, but she outranked them. She switched off the recorders and faced me.
What?
You've got to know a few things about Imperator Turov.
Her eyes widened a little.
I've heard things about you and her.
I'm not talking about the personal stuff. I'm talking about geopolitical realities. She ordered me to kill the Narb ship. Check the logs. She was the last one I talked to before leaving Cyclops.
Belter was frowning now. I had her attention.
Why the hell would she do that?
Because we worked together to kill a galactic back on Earth. You remember that accident that happened with an air car on top of Central?
She nodded slowly. Her frown was bigger than ever.
Didn't that seem a little odd to you?
Well, it was bullshit. Turov and Claver were up to all kinds of shenanigans, and the Galactic found out. She ordered me to kill him, and we faked the wreck together. Then we erased the Galactic's latest mind back up and pushed him over the side of the building.
She snorted.
That's absurd.
It happened. I was there. She was there. Check the logs, not the candied-up news reports. Here's something interesting. Graves and Leeson needed a revive after that accident, too. Why was that? They weren't in the air car, were they?
Shut up for a second, she said.
She was working her tapper quickly. She brought up the official reports of that fateful day's events and went over them.
Okay,
she said after a few minutes.
Let's say I believe your crazy story. How the hell did you erase the mental backup of a Magua official?
Now you're thinking, I said encouragingly. The answer to that one is in Turov's office. In fact, it's probably in her pocket. She looked at me curiously.
She wouldn't let us question you and perm you if all this was true. She has too much to hide.
I laughed.
I'm not getting permed. Abused, yes, but not permed. I work for her. I just thought I'd give you a few pointers on how things went around here to help you out. If you stay quiet about all this, now that you know the score, you'll keep your career intact.
I thought I had her pretty bamboozled by now. Most of my story was true, but not my importance, which I was exaggerating. Hell, Turov was probably hoping they'd perm my ass after torturing me for a while. Belter moved with sudden decision. She unclamped my right arm, then drew her sidearm, pointed it at my chest, and stepped back.
All right, she said. Free yourself and come with me. We're going to talk with my Primus.
How about your Tribune?
Belter looked troubled.
I don't think he's been revived yet.
I brayed with laughter while I fumbled out of the clamps. That's old Turov again. She's tricky that way. Doesn't like high-level brass around. They argue too much when she wants to do something off-script.
She's dramatically off-script on this campaign, I'll grant you that. You'll repeat your story to my Primus, and you'll go back to a cell. You won't be permed until you've given a full deposition in front of an officer's court.
I knew now that Belter had taken the bait. She wanted to take on Imperator Turov, and she thought my testimony might be enough. Everyone in Solstice was mad at Turov for a stack of good reasons. I'd been counting on that. She let me get dressed, signed me out of the detention center, and marched me down the passages toward Gold Deck. I didn't move on her until we were in a fairly lonely passageway. I had a bloody streak down my ribs and was breathing hard before it was over, but she was face down on the deck, unconscious. I dragged her into a data closet and locked it. Belter had fought well, but she'd made a critical mistake. She'd let me get my hands free. Chapter 40. Leaving Centurion Belter asleep in the data closet with computers humming all around her, I moved on determinedly. I strapped on her sidearm, happy that smart cloth uniforms could stretch to fit anyone, and marched the rest of the way to Gold Deck. Fortunately, not every man in the task force knew me and my status as a prisoner. As it was a sensitive case, it probably hadn't even gone public yet. No one wanted to create more witnesses than necessary for the Nerbs to question later. I wasn't challenged until I reached the hatchway that led to the command section, and there I used Turov's name. They contacted her, and I waited and sweated. Turov allowed me to pass the guards. That was a relief, sort of. I marched up to her office, and the door opened. We greeted one another with guns in our hands. She was aiming hers at me, and I was aiming mine at her. We both smiled tightly.
"Who ordered you to be released from detention?"
she demanded.
"I didn't authorize it."
I wasn't exactly released. She nodded, unsurprised.
"All right, then. What do you want from me, McGill, you crazy bastard?"
I looked her straight in the eye. "The key," I said. Her eyes widened. She hadn't expected that one.
"No,"
she said quickly. "I'll bring it back," I said. "I promise."
"No way."
"Then I'll kill you where you stand and take it anyway, your choice." She glared at me. There was blood on my face and scabs on my wrists. There was also a determined look in my eye that no one who knew me could completely ignore.
"Why did I let you in here?"
she asked. I wasn't sure if she was asking me or talking to herself. "I don't know, sir. Maybe you like my smile, but here we are." She took a deep breath.
"No,"
she said again.
"I can't let you have the key. Not even for old time's sake, James."
"How long has it been since you killed someone with that pistol, Imperata?" I asked her. "This is a duel at two paces. That's harder to win than it seems. And if I win, I promise I'll perm you." Her eyes narrowed and her small fingers tightened on her weapon.
"You'd go that far?"
"Yes, I'm on a mission."
"I don't like threats. If I win, I will do the same."
I shrugged. "I've got nothing to lose. This is all up to you." She saw something in my eyes, or maybe heard it in my voice. She could tell I wasn't bluffing.
"Have you told anyone about the key?"
she asked. "No, not yet," I lied. She lowered the gun and walked away into her office. This surprised me, but when I thought it over, it made sense. If she went along with my threats, she knew I'd probably let her live. On the other hand, even if I killed her right here on her plush imported carpet, she'd be revived in the end, and I'd be permed for my crimes. The guns didn't even matter in a way, as long as she got me out of her office before I erased her data with the key. For her, dying would be unpleasant, but only temporary. I took her sidearm anyway, just in case she changed her mind, and then I took the Galactic key. She had it in her belt pouch, like I figured she would. Something like that was too valuable to leave in a safe or under your pillow. You had to have it handy for emergencies, or it wasn't worth owning. Getting close to her and searching her body, that did something to me. I could smell her perfume while I dug in her pockets. Her body was warm and firm, and her eyes shone in the office lights as she glared up at me. angry, but pretty. I couldn't help but recall a few blissful experiences we'd shared in the past. I wanted to kiss her, but I sensed this wasn't the right time. "I'll be back in half an hour," I said. "I promise, Galina."
"You'd better be, or I'm going to have you arrested with fresh charges."
"Wait until I get back, or I'll go public with the key." After our exchange of threats, she watched me leave. She wore a sour, wistful expression. As I walked down long passageways back to the aft section of the ship, I reflected on the strange chemistry I had going with this particular woman. It had to be the oddest relationship of my long and storied career with the opposite sex. On any given day, we were as likely to engineer the other's demise as we were to make love. We'd done both in equal measure for years now. She could have me tracked down and arrested right now, of course, but she didn't. Personally, I think that deep down she didn't want to see the last of me. No matter how much she talked about getting rid of old James McGill, I still turned her on at some primitive level. Maybe we were in a twisted, mutually abusive love affair. One thing was for sure. We were a couple made in hell. When I made it back to the detention center, the guard stopped me and moved to arrest me. I was prepared for that. I pulled Turov's face up on my tapper.
"Let him through,"
she said glumly. I knew she didn't want me to blab about her key. She just wanted me to get this over with. The door into the torture chamber opened and slammed shut behind me a few minutes later. My two best friends were there talking and sipping coffee. Randy, that asshole, he was playing a vid of me on his tapper and laughing about it. On his arm, I was squirming in the chair. It must have been a different version of James McGill, as I couldn't recall having had that many needles shoved into me all at once. Neither man was armed, as they didn't want to risk a prisoner getting his hands on a gun. Bill stood up and looked at my pistol. He knew the score, and he didn't even say anything. His eyes focused on the bloody, stained deck at his feet. That's all. I shot him in the face, and he sagged down like a sack of meal. Randy fought. One second he was smiling and laughing at my video, and the next he snarled like a dog and charged me, getting in close before I could get my pistol lined up properly. The gun spun away and we were on the deck, trading vicious blows. He didn't go down easily. I had to pin him. I even ripped out one eye, but he still fought on. Maybe he knew what his fate would be, too. When Randy finally lay still on the deck, I used the key on his tapper, and I erased him. Not just his life, but all record that he'd ever existed. Maybe his mama had a few baby pictures saved somewhere back on Earth, but that was about it. The only people who would remember him were those who knew him personally and could attest that he'd once drawn breath. As far as all the computers in the galaxy were concerned, he'd never been alive at all. When I was done, I looked at the key. Such power. I'd never permed a man before, and it felt strange. I tried not to think about it afterward, but of course, I did. Why'd I do it? Because such a man didn't deserve to live. What right did I have to perm another human being? I don't know. What right did he have to kill 7 versions of me in a row? Like I said, I tried not to think about it. But I did. The detention people were understandably upset when they got to the torture chamber and found both their star tormentors dead on the deck. They found me sitting on the steel chair, looking down at the bodies thoughtfully. "Drop the weapon, veteran." I did so, then I held up my hands. On my forearm was a live feed displaying Turov's face.
"Let veteran McGill go,"
she ordered. "Are you under some kind of duress, sir?"
"No, he has acted under my authority. He is to be escorted to my office immediately, but don't listen to anything else he says."
The guards weren't happy, but they did as she ordered. They muttered and complained all the way back up to Gold Deck.
Centurion Belter made an appearance along the way, and she almost crashed the whole party. She was raving mad, half-naked, and she had a lot of grease and dirt on her. She must have had a hard time getting out of that locked data closet. "Sorry, sir," I said when faced with her shouts and curses. When the guards explained I was under Turov's protection, she took her sidearm and left me, snarling about traitors and bastards. Since I felt I was neither, I didn't feel the sting of her barbs. It occurred to me as we reached Gold Deck that Turov might very well have me shot when I got there. But those were the breaks. I'd done what I wanted to do. I'd made my bargain with the devil, and I was going to keep my end of it no matter how it turned out. When I got there, she saw I was unarmed, and so she waved my escort back outside into the passages. Her office door closed behind me, and we were alone. I stood at attention as she walked around me, staring up curiously. She stopped when she got around to face me again and shook her head.
"You're a wonder, James McGill."
"Thank you, sir." She held out her hand.
"Give it to me."
I put the galactic key into her small palm. She made it disappear like a magician palming a gold coin. One second it was there, and the next it wasn't. Then she surprised me by putting her pistol on her desk.
"James, I'm sorry," she said.
Of all the things Galina Turov might have said to me, this was probably the last one I was expecting. I glanced down, looking into her face for an instant. Our eyes met, and she honestly looked troubled.
"I reviewed the vid files while you were gone," she said. "I didn't know. I swear it. And I don't want you to blame all of Solstice, either. My orders were to extract the truth. They were overzealous in their efforts."
"You could say that." She stared at me thoughtfully for a second.
"What happened on the Nerb ship? Give me the truth."
I told her. I told her everything. About Claver, the Nerb death chamber, the squid missile pod, even the chocolate bar. She listened, shaking her head from time to time and making sounds of disbelief.
"All right," she said when I finished. "I'm going to trust you on this one. What's done is done, anyway. If the Nerbs don't buy that the cephalopods destroyed their ship, executing you won't have any effect on their condemnation of Earth. Your charges are dismissed."
"Thank you, sir," I said.
"Why did you need the key for simple revenge?"
she asked.
"You had a pistol. That would have been enough for the McGill I know."
I thought about my answer. She didn't know that I'd erased that guy, Randy. He just wasn't there anymore in the computer systems, and anyone who's ever looked for a ghost can tell you they're not easy to find. You don't even notice when they're not around anymore.
"What would you have had me do?" I asked her. "If it had been you in that chair for 7 lives." "7?
She asked, shocked.
"I didn't know."
I took 3 steps toward her. She backed up 1 pace and put her hand on the desk near her pistol, but she didn't pick it up. I touched her shoulder. I don't know why, really. We'd been close once. Maybe that was it. Touching her just felt right. She didn't even seem to notice. She was looking into my eyes, not my hands. "Galina," I said, "we've been through it, you and I. Life, death, love, and despair. This is one more of those moments, that's all."
"But what did you do?"
"People think I do whatever I want, but that's not true. I did what I had to do." She finally caught on then.
"You erased them?"
Her eyes were big.
"That's why you needed the key. Killing those 2 wasn't enough?"
"For one man it was, but not for the other." She nodded as if she understood. Maybe she did understand, I'm not sure. She looked so young, but she wasn't a kid. She'd seen a lot in her lifetime, just as I had.
"I'll cover it up," she said. "Don't worry about it."
"Thanks," I said. "But I'll never forget this day.
She gave me a little kiss. It was a strangely gentle gesture coming from her. I took my hand off her after that and left. She didn't try to stop me. She didn't say anything at all. It was hard to know what she was thinking. I didn't ask because I didn't care. I'd had a long, hard day, and it was finally done. Chapter 41 Imperator Turov's idea of covering up was a little different than mine. She didn't erase records or stage a hearing to clear my name. She just dropped the charges and ordered everyone involved to shut the hell up. It was effective on a surface level, I had to give her that. The Legion officials stopped trying to arrest me, and I was restored to my previous rank and position in Winslade's cavalry cohort. I don't think Winslade was too happy about that part, but he didn't say anything. He had to be wondering what kind of strange power I had over Turov. No one said much to me at all, in fact, but they did stare, and a few of them sneered. They talked. Oh, yeah, they talked. But only behind my back. Carlos was an exception to that rule. He didn't just sneer and whisper, he came right out and bitched about what had happened. "Another sleazy con job," he said. "Or should I say blow job?" "What?" I asked, jolted out of my thoughts. I was running down the pilot's checklist on my Dragon. It was all shined up and ready for the parade ground. It had been a week since our last battle, and that had allowed us to repair and polish our deadly machines. Carlos and I were standing in the mechanics bay under the bellies of our respective vehicles. Originally, I'd placed his Dragon in a pod at the far end of the bay, but that hadn't worked out. Sure, he'd been less annoying to me, but he'd irritated everyone else. Without me to shut his mouth, his naturally charismatic personality had driven the rest of my squad nuts. Consequently, I'd moved him right up next to me so I could keep an eye on him.
"You heard me," he said. "Turov still has a thing for you. It's obvious and undeniable. If any of the rest of us had pulled shit like that, we'd have been permed instantly." "Well, maybe not instantly. They might have tortured us for a while first."
At the mention of torture, I bared my teeth. I could still feel Randy's hot needle in my back. Anne had sprayed several layers of fresh cells over the puncture wounds, but they still ached and stung, especially when I stretched in the morning. "You don't know what the hell you're talking about," I told him, "and you should stop talking before I stop you myself." For some reason, he got the message this time. He fell quiet, although he was still muttering to himself about how unfair the universe was. He opened the leg actuators on his vehicle to make some tension adjustments, and I left the bay. I had a headache, a backache, and I was pissed off. I went to see Anne, who looked me over doubtfully.
"I think you have an internal infection," she said. "How did this happen, James? Did you report these injuries?"
"Sort of."
"What does that mean? Are they from training or working in the bays or what?"
Hesitating, I thought about my answer before I spoke. Finally, I shook my head.
"The injuries were deliberate," I said,
"courtesy of Legion Solstice." Anne was alarmed and angry about that.
"You should report them. This goes beyond hazing and bar fighting. This is abuse."
She applied salves to my skin and gave me a hefty shot of antibiotics deep in my abdomen. The shot made me a little sick, and the long needle reminded me of Randy again. She put a hand on my forearm, then read the results that lit up her tapper.
"Slight fever. Blood toxins are up. Are you sleeping?"
"Sometimes." She kept prodding me and checking me over. At last, I'd had enough of it, and I gently took her hands in mine.
"Let's go on a date," I said.
She looked into my eyes, still worried.
"What happened to you? This could be serious. You didn't have a bad revive again, did you?"
That made me laugh. I had several of them, in fact, and I don't want to take another trip through the revival machines if that's what you're suggesting. I just need some cheering up and some time to heal.
"I don't know," she said, looking down at her hands, which were still wrapped up inside mine.
"What?
Why not? You promised me another date a while back, remember?"
She nodded, but she still didn't look at me.
"This is the best shot we're going to get," I said. "Things are pretty quiet right now. Everyone's been revived, even the Tribunes. If we get into another fight, we'll be separated again. If we fly back home, well, we might not see each other until the next campaign."
Anne pulled her hands out of my grip and sighed.